Okay, Matthew chapter 7. I'll just read two verses, and then I'll leave the rest up to you. Matthew chapter 7 verse 13. Enter by the narrow gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leads to destruction. And there are many who go in by it. Because narrow is the gate, and difficult is the way which leads to life. And there are few who find it. Jesus has come to the end of the Sermon on the Mount. For many of you, you would have already heard something about the Sermon on the Mount. It is perhaps one of the greatest pieces of literature ever written. And if you have heard about it and have not read it, I would urge you to spend 10 minutes of your time this evening to go through just three chapters, and I believe it will do you a world of good. It is perhaps really one of the greatest pieces of literature ever written. And not only Christians admire it, many non-Christians of different religions have praised it and admired it because it has such a great amount of wisdom. But I believe that there is more than just human wisdom within these chapters. And so even as we want to go to it in prayer, knowing that it is not us by our own human wisdom that is able to understand this, but it is by the Spirit of God who will give us that ability to understand and to know what it really says. The Sermon on the Mount begins in chapter 5 and it finishes in chapter 7. There are three chapters of it, and Jesus has already completed most of it, and now he comes to the final part of it. And then he says to his disciples there, and he says, enter by the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction, and there are many who go in by it, because narrow is the gate and difficult is the way which leads to life, and there are few who find it. Jesus essentially tells us at this last part of the Sermon on the Mount that there are two ways that a life can take. He tells us very specifically there are only two ways that life can take. He doesn't tell us that there is a third way. He doesn't tell us that there is four. He only tells us there are two ways that life can take. And here he tells us very clearly that one way leads to life and the other way leads to destruction. In fact, if you were to read the next few verses, you will find that Jesus again tells us the same thing, because further down he tells us that there are two kinds of prophets. There are the false prophets and there are the true prophets. And then a little bit further down he tells us again there are two kinds of Christians. One is the superficial kind, and then the other one is the one that is really committed. Those are the ones that he recognizes when he returns. And then finally he tells us that in life there are two kinds of foundations that you can build. One is the foundation built on rock that will stand the test of life, and the other is the foundation that is built on sand, where the house is built on sand, the foundation of sand, and it will be blown away. These are very serious words. These are words that affect all our lives. These are words that has to do with life itself. Very often we go through life not thinking about these things, but really, if we were to sit down and to measure our life, you will find that these are really and truly important things. I want to outline for you first the Sermon on the Mount, so that roughly those of you who have not read it, you will have an idea of what it is. Jesus begins the Sermon on the Mount in chapter 5, verse 1, where he says, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Then he goes further on and says, blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. And it goes on like this. And here in this first part of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus tells us the characteristics of a Christian. He tells us the characteristics of what a Christian life is. He doesn't tell us what to do. He's just telling us the facts. This is a Christian. This is the picture. If you want to paint him, these are the colors that you will use. If you want to find out what a Christian looks like, look for these things and you will see it. He tells us only the characteristics of the Christian. And a little bit further down, towards the end of it, he says this, blessed are you when they revile and persecute you and say all kinds of evil against you falsely for my sake. He tells us that a Christian, because of these characteristics that he has, when he is out there in the world, he will face persecution. And here we get an idea of what Jesus means at the end of it when he says that when the narrow gate leads to a hard way. Further down, after that, the second section, Jesus goes on and then he gives us a short introduction and tells us what the Christian has to do with the Old Testament law. And here he tells us, in effect, that the Christian's righteousness is to exceed that of the Pharisees. When he finishes with that, he tells us what the Christian has to do in his religious life. In the religious life, Jesus says that the Christian's religion is not supposed to be showy. It is supposed to be a religion of the heart. It is a religion where the Christian goes before his God personally, and he is judged by his God personally, and he relates to his God personally, and he is accountable to his God personally. That's the Christian's religion. Then he tells us a little bit about the Christian in life. There you find in chapter 6, verse 19, there he tells us, and he outlines to us a few things that the Christian does. You will just turn with me, chapter 6, verse 19. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. And he tells us, the Christian in life, as he deals with worldliness, as he deals with the things of the world, what his attitude should be, or rather what his attitude really is. And there you will be able to find the Christian, because he is distinctive in the way that he deals with the things of the world. Then from chapter 7 verse 1 onwards, he tells us the Christian's relationship with other people. And then chapter 7 verse 1, he says, judge not that you be not judged, for with what judgment you judge, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. So roughly that's the outline of the Sermon on the Mount. And if you want to know more, and I believe you will want to, I would advise you to read through all of it. And then you will be able to have a clearer picture of what we will be doing tonight and tomorrow night. Tonight we will deal with just the two verses, and then tomorrow night I will deal with the last two verses in chapter 7. Let me read to us again what verse 13 tells us. Jesus has finished telling us what the Christian life is, given us the characteristics, he has told us how the Christian is in religious life, how the Christian is supposed to react in the world, how the Christian is supposed to relate to other people. He has given us a whole lot of teaching there, a whole lot of facts that has been given to us. Now he ends, and he comes to the last part, and he asks essentially here for our commitment. He asks essentially here for us to make a decision, and he gives us the reasons in these two lines here why you should make the decision that he tells us to do. In 7 verse 13 he says, enter by the narrow gate. He has finished everything and he comes to the end and he calls for a decision from us. I think that's very important for all of us. In life we receive a lot of teaching, we receive a lot of advice from people, we read a lot, we study a lot, we know a lot. But all these things is of no value to you and is useless to you if you are unable to apply it, if you don't take what you have learned and use it. And here, this is what Jesus is telling us. I have given you all this teaching. What are you going to do with it? That's why he says here, enter by the narrow gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leads to destruction. And there are many who go on in it. We can roughly divide these two verses, into a few parts. Essentially here, it tells us Jesus tells us the command at the beginning. He says, enter by the narrow gate. And then after that, he compares two things. He compares two gates. One gate is narrow, the other gate is wide. Then he tells us that the narrow gate leads into a narrow way, a hard way, he says. And the wide gate leads into an easy way. And then after that, he says that there are two destinations. The narrow gate, the hard way leads to life. And the wide gate, the easy way, leads to destruction. And he tells us of two groups of people. In the narrow way, and the in the narrow gate and the hard way, there is a small group of people. But in that broad and easy way, there is a large group of people going through it. What does this have to do with what Jesus said earlier on about all the teaching? Basically, it's very simply this. Jesus is telling that all the teaching that I have been giving you, that is the narrow way. That is the difficult path to take. But that is the way, and that is the gate that will lead to life. It's here in this particular passage where it says the word gate. Commentators have said that the gate refers to a turnstile gate. You all know what a turnstile gate is? If you have been to a Stadium Negara, or maybe one of the other shopping mall, I think there is one in Subang Jaya, Macro, where when you walk in, it is not a gate, it's not a doorway open to you and you walk straight in, but it's a revolving kind of thing, where one person only can go in at a time. And this is the kind of gate that Jesus refers to. In other words, it's the kind of gate where perhaps you want to count the number of sheep that is going through it. One sheep can go in at a time, and so you count as one sheep goes in. And this is the gate that Jesus talks about. It's a narrow gate. It's a gate that one person can only go in at a time. And the lesson that we can draw from this, quite simply, is this. That in life, each of us is responsible for himself. As we walk through that gate, each one of us, we make the decision ourselves. You make the decision as an individual. You don't go and ask a friend whether I should go through that gate. You don't go and consult with other people and then you follow what they tell you. You don't go through that and then after that, at the end of it, I think I have made a mistake. But the mistake is not mine. Somebody else told me to walk through this gate. No. The decision to walk through this gate is yours and yours alone. You make that decision. You go in. Nobody is there with you. Very often when I go through a turnstile kind of revolving kind of door, I think of the time when I bring my children, when there was a little kid, okay, maybe he's just, I think he or she was then small, you know, and I had to take them by the hand. I noticed that when I go through this revolving door, I can't bring him or her together with me. We will be a very tight squeeze. We can't do that. And I will have to leave him or her to go in the next time the thing turns around. And I go in there and I'm very worried whether he or she will follow me. If I put him or her in front of me, I am not sure whether he or she will be able to go through by him or herself. And so therefore, it is something that we do by ourselves. That is what life is. A life you live yourself. A life you take responsibility for yourself. And you make the decisions yourself. And that's how you begin life. And at the end of life, you look at it and you look back at it. You cannot blame anybody. You cannot hold somebody else responsible. It is something, it is a decision you have made. It is something that you yourself have to be responsible for. Then again, this gate, Jesus tells us, is narrow, which means to say you can't take many things along with you. It is not a gate where if you were to walk through one of those revolving things, you cannot bring with you a backpack that is very big, you know, you put all your barang-barang inside and then you expect to walk through it. No, you will get stuck, you can't go through. Some commentators will say that you have to go in there by yourself alone without anything else. You go in there just by yourself. You cannot carry anything along with you. And if you want to go through this gate, you have to leave many things else behind you. There is a commentator who says this, and he summarizes. He says that one must strip himself of many things, such as a consuming desire for earthly goods. That if somebody were to enter through this gate, he says, he must also strip himself of the unforgiving spirit, selfishness, especially self-righteousness. To enter through this gate, Jesus tells us in effect, you have to be poor in spirit. That means when you go through this gate, you can't go through this gate with all your sins. You can't go through this gate with all your self-righteousness, with all your pride. You have to go in there just by yourself, without any of these things. And you face God as you are. And you have to leave all these things behind. Then again he tells us about this narrow gate that leads into a hard way. Jesus does not say that it's just a way, it is a hard way. It is a difficult way. The Sermon on the Mount, the things it tells us to do, are hard and difficult things. It tells us to love our enemies. Have you ever thought of that? Have you sat down and really thought about that? Love that guy whom you hate. Love that guy who stabbed you in the back. Love that guy who cheated behind you. Love that guy who spilled the beans on you. That guy who is out to make life difficult for you, Jesus says, you must love him. That is the Christian way. That is the Christian life. That is the life that goes through that narrow gate that leads to life at the end. Jesus tells us again that this life is a hard way. He says the sins that you think that you don't commit because you don't do them. Oh, you say to yourself, I have not stolen, I have not cheated, I have not done very many things bad. In fact, I look at myself and I think, I'm pretty alright. I'm pretty okay. In fact, I don't even say bad words. I don't smoke, I don't drink, I don't go and party, I don't go to the pub. I'm a pretty good person. But Jesus says to us that you don't need to do all these things in order to be a bad person. He says you can stay at home, sit in your room, surrounded, hedged with everything, where you are given all the comforts of the world, and yet without doing anything, he says you are the most sinful and the most filthy person there is. Because he says sin doesn't begin with doing something. Sin begins in the mind. The very minute you have some ill feeling towards another person, Jesus says, there is a special place in hell waiting for you. There is a special place in hell just for you, he says. He says to people, you don't have to commit adultery in order to be called adulterous. He says all you need to do is look at a certain person and have a desire for him or her, and that is enough. It makes you an adulteress or an adulterer. You have already committed adultery. He says many things like these. He says all these things which we ourselves do not associate with sin, says these things are sin, and these things are things that plague you, and these things are things you can do very little about. Ask yourself this: have you not told a lie? I don't tell lies. When do I ever tell a thing I have told a lie? Maybe once. Maybe my out of trouble, but it's very small. But Jesus says, that's sin. It is a difficult way. You have to leave all these things behind if you want to enter through that narrow gate. It is a difficult life that is ahead of you to be without all these things. You can't live as you like. like, you can't do things as you like. You can't be an independent person. To live the Christian life, to live and walk in that hard way, Jesus says, you have a master. Somebody whom you are accountable to. Somebody you have to listen to. Somebody who lays down the rules for you and you have to follow. How many of us doesn't yearn to be age 21 and out there working and don't have to be accountable to our parents anymore? No need to come back at 11 o'clock curfew time or 12 o'clock curfew time. How many of us do not want that? But he says, you want to live the Christian life? That is a way to live it. And that is a way that you have to follow. It is not something that you can just do as you please, do as you like, follow your feelings. No. He says there is a way that you have to do things. You have to listen to your master. And he has given all these guidelines to us in the Sermon on the Mount in the past three chapters. And that is the way that is given to us. But then you say, I have been a Christian for a long time. I've done these things. But then Jesus tells us that it is a way. It is not just a matter of entering the narrow gate. Many of us think, oh, I am a Christian. I've been baptized. You know, I have listened to the gospel. And therefore, I've been baptized. I'm a church member now. I'm going on well. I have gone through that narrow gate. I am well on the way, you say to yourself. But somebody gave me a piece of wisdom some years back. And he told me this. He says, the Christian life is not a 100-meter sprint. It is a marathon. Just because you have gone through that gate. Just because now you are settled in the church. Just because now you think you are a good guy, you are well on the way. Jesus says, no, it is a marathon. It is not over yet. There are very many things on the way. There are very many temptations on the way. And if you are not careful, you will fall. It is a way. It is a hard way. It is a difficult way. It is also a difficult way because, like I have said, it is not something that you will want to do naturally. The Christian way of life is a life that goes against the grain. You know what I mean of going against the grain? Try, if you will see a piece of wood that is not well, take for example this piece here. It is well, it's properly shaped and so it's very smooth. But when it is, before it is rubbed down and before it is sandpapered and it is rough, you try running your hand against it and you will find chips of wood stuck to your finger. And that's what it means, going against the grain. And the Christian life is like that. It goes against the grain of your natural self. You want to do something. But Jesus tells you otherwise. You feel like doing this. You feel like giving in to this. Jesus says, no. The Christian way of life is different. It goes against your life. It goes against the natural self. And every time you want to live the Christian life, you have to make a conscious and conscientious decision. This is the way it's going to be, and this is the way that I'm going to follow. Even though you don't like it. Even though you don't feel like it. And most of the time I tell you, you don't feel like it. Jesus tells you to do. That's why he says, how many of us feel like loving your enemies? How many of us feel like doing good to our enemies? Let's not talk about loving them first. Do good to them. I think half the time, you are planning murder in your heart for them. I wouldn't be surprised if you couldn't go to sleep thinking about what you're going to do to them when you wake up. But that's us. That's the natural self. But Jesus says, you want to live the Christian life. You want to go through that narrow gate, walk the hard way, and end up with life. Well, that is what a Christian life is. difficult. It's very hard. Goes against the grain of your nature. It's not something that you like to do. So there is the narrow gate. There is the hard way. And then Jesus tells us there are two destinations. Of course, side by side with this narrow gate, you have the wide gate. You know, that gate down there is not a turnstile gate. It's a wide open gate. When you walk through it, you cannot even see the edges of it. You stroll through it because there's a lot of space. You don't have to jam in together with everybody else. You can bring anything along with you. You can bring your sins along with you. You can do as you please. You feel like it, you just do as you please. You move left, you move right. Nobody is there to tell you any other way. Just go in. And there are lots of people together with you. Lots of good friends who are thinking like you. And you walk through it and you do as you please. What about the way? Once you go through that gate, what about the way? Oh, it's a nice way. You slide along the way. You don't even need to walk. You don't want to walk later. The first time I went to Singapore Airport, and I thought, my God, to walk to that gate where I'm supposed to catch my plane, and I saw this walkulator. You call that walkulator, I think? You just step on it, and it goes, you know? It takes you along together with all your luggage. Now, that's what the broad gate will lead you to. It's the easy way. No problems. Everything, you just go along that way. Do as you please. And you go along. But Jesus tells us there are two destinations at the end of it. First, he says the narrow gate and the hard way leads you to life. Life is that heavenly way, or that heavenly life, where you are, when you spend your time with God in eternity. The Bible gives us certain pictures about this kind of a way. If you turn me to Revelation chapter 7, 15 to 17, it tells us something about this kind of life at the end of it. Revelation chapter 7, verse 15 to 17. Therefore they are before the throne of God and serve him day and night in his temple, and he who sits on the throne will dwell among them. They shall neither hunger any more, nor thirst any more. The sun shall not strike them, nor any heat. For the Lamb who is in the midst of the throne will shepherd them and lead them to living fountains of waters. And God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. Why does the Bible say this? Why does the Bible say that God will wipe away every tear from their eyes? I wouldn't be surprised if it is because all throughout their lives they have been crying and they have been shedding tears along the way because it has been a hard way. God now assures them there will be no more tears from here on. The hard way is ended. You have arrived at your destination. And then he says, you shall neither hunger anymore nor thirst anymore. Again, he tells us that the hard way is the difficult way. A lot of hungering, a lot of thirsting, a lot of yearning for something along that hard way. But now, when they have arrived at their destination, no more hungering, no more thirsting. It is a picture given to us not because people are physically hungry or physically thirsty, but it tells us that all their problems are come to an end. All those praying with a loud voice. If anyone worships the beast and his image and receives this mark on his forehead or on his hand, he himself shall also drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is poured out full strength into the cup of his indignation. He shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb. And the smoke of their torment ascends forever and ever, and they have no rest day or night who worship the beast and his image, and whoever receives the mark of his name. Terrible end. Frightening end. I can think of suffering for a little while. I can think, or I can bear the little pain for a little while. I can bear with a toothache that will last me throughout the night when I don't sleep. I cannot imagine a toothache that lasts forever. But this is not a toothache that the Bible is telling us about. Many more times than just a toothache. It is not something that just lasts through the night. It's something that lasts forever. You know what's forever? Have you sat down and thought a little bit about forever, what it means? When I was a young child, the one thing that my mother taught me was this. We didn't come from we had enough. We were not very rich. But we had enough. But my mother told me this. I think quite some... And she drummed this into my head. And she says that, you know, we go through life like this. We are not the richest. We see other people who have much more than we have got. We have our times of difficulty, going through the Second World War and so on. But she told me this. She says, all this will end. All this will stop one day. All this will be at an end. But she said this, you make a mistake in this life. You make a wrong decision in this life. And you end up wrongly. She told me this. You will suffer an eternity. She told me this. She says you can go through life suffering any amount. Going through any amount of poverty. Going through any amount of pain. But all this in this life will stop. But you make the wrong decision in this life. You end up wrongly. You will suffer for an eternity. For me as a young chap, it was a frightening thing to imagine what eternal suffering is. And Jesus tells us this. At the end, there are two destinations. One is eternal life, one is eternal suffering. Then Jesus tells us about two crowds, two groups of people. He says, doesn't say very much. He only says that through the narrow way, narrow gate and the hard way and that destination of life, there are few. There are few who will choose to enter by the narrow gate. There are few who will choose to go through that hard life. So therefore, at the destination at the end, there are very few. But he says to this group here, the one that goes on the broad gate, the one who was swaggering through the way through this gate, and he was enjoying life, doing as he pleased and doing as he felt like. He says, when they come to that end, they will have lots of people with them. They will have a lot of companions with them, because many will choose that way. So basically Jesus tells us this. We have more or less come to the end already. If I'm not only considered the first line that Jesus told us. The first line Jesus tells us is enter by the narrow gate. And then there is a little word down there that is for, that says down there. Enter by the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction. Jesus gives us here some reasons why we are to choose that narrow gate. And I think that that is Jesus' concern here. Of course, we want to explain what that narrow gate means, that hard way means, and that destination. But Jesus' concern is not only just to tell us to go through that narrow gate, because he could have easily just said, enter through the narrow gate and you will end up with life and finish it off. Why does Jesus go on and say, for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction? Why does he give us reasons like that? I think that really is the point. He's giving us reasons there to choose correctly. He's giving us reasons there and telling us to think. He says, don't go through life just like that. Somebody says this and then you go through. No, think. Christianity is a thinking religion. It requires of us to think. It requires of us to use our mind and the powers given to us to think and to reason. I'm not saying that by through your reasoning alone you will arrive at all the solutions and arrive at salvation, but I'm saying that it requires of us that. It requires of us to think through. And that's why Jesus says he's not satisfied with just telling us, enter by the narrow gate and then you will arrive at life. No. He says, enter by the narrow gate. I'm here going to give you the reasons why you should make this choice. And the reasons are this. He tells us firstly that in making our choice, we must make our choice based on our destination. Based on where we end up. That is the reason how. And that is how you make your choice. You don't make your choice by looking at that gate. Oh, it's so wide. It's so nice. It's so well lit. Let me just walk through it. No, Jesus says no. You don't make a decision like that. Before you go out in life, before you begin, you think of where you want to end up. Now, today, if you have not thought about it, ask yourself this question. Where do you want to be when you die? You have to begin now and ask that question. Do you want to be in heaven or do you want to be in hell? You have to make that decision now. You don't just accidentally at the end of your life just drop into heaven or drop into hell. No. It begins now for you to think. That's why he gives you the reasons. And he says, you want to make a decision, you want to make the right decision, you do it by basing it on the destination you want to arrive at. You want to go to Singapore? What do? You want to fly to Singapore? You go to KLIA. You don't say to yourself, "Ayah, KLIA is so far away, so difficult. Ayah, I might as well go through Subang Airport lah, nearby only." Will you end up in Singapore if you go to Subang? I mean, you know better than me. You don't. When you think, when you want to arrive at something, when you want to do something, you think of the end of it. When you want to build a house, you don't just simply assemble some stones and sticks and wood and then hope you'll come up with something that you will like. No, you have some idea in mind what you want it to be. And he says, in life it is like this. Before you can even begin to take the next step, think about where you will end up. One of the most difficult things as parents, I think, for me at least, is to teach my children to think about the consequences of their decisions and the consequences of their actions. Most of the time, they don't. They just do. At the spot and at the point of it, why are you doing this? No, I just felt like doing it. Why are you doing this? Oh, I just happened to be doing it. People don't think about their consequences. People don't think about the end. People don't think about the destination where they will end up. You know, you can make a lot of mistakes in this life and you can make corrections for them. But in the case of this, the narrow gate and the broad gate, you cannot afford to just simply make a mistake. You have to think now where you want to end up. Secondly, Jesus tells us that when you make that choice, he says, don't make that choice based on how easy it is to arrive at that destination. When you're making a choice, when you're making a decision, don't do something just based on, oh, it's so easy, it's so simple, therefore let me do it. You know, think about it, many of you are thinking about your careers. Some want to become doctors, some want to become dentists, and some want to be, well, atomic scientists, I don't know, okay? But you don't go to the college or to the university down there. Let's say you want to become a doctor. You don't go to the college or the university there and then you talk to the student counseling and they will tell you this. Oh, you want to become a doctor? Well, this is the course that you will take. You know, you've got to study like this. You've got to be able to do this. You've got to be able to put time for this. You've got to slog. You've got to memorize. You've got to go through all these books and you've got to go through all these courses. And probably you've got to work many hours late into the night burning the candle just in order to finish the course and you're not even sure of passing it. And after it's all over, you need to go for housemanship before you are recognized. And those are long hours you got to slog in the hospital. Then you say to yourself, then after that you go to another one and he says, no, we've got this course. Ah, yeah, this one, kacang, senang. You know, you do it without, you can do it with your eyes closed, he will tell you that. You know, it's, everybody is doing it. It's so simple. What do? You want to become a doctor. And you say to yourself, no, lah, this way is very hard. This way is very simple. So what do? You take the easy way. But are you going to be a doctor at the end of it? You don't end up becoming a doctor like that. You see, Jesus says, don't make your decision based on whether it is easy or whether it is hard that way. The way may be hard, but you arrive at a destination. If the way is easy, it doesn't mean that's the reason for you to take it. I don't know about many of you. Perhaps in our country it's not as bad, but there are lots of other countries, third world countries, where people make their decisions about cheating in examinations, cheating at university examinations, and they think to themselves, it's so easy. So, you know, why study? Why burn the midnight lamp when I can do so many other things into the late hours of the night and then just give a call to my friend, I get all the questions, papers and all the answers for me? That's the easy way. And many people take that kind of a way. But let me tell you this, you make that decision to do that, you have already begun to take that. You have already begun to enter that broad gate. You are already on that easy road to destruction. You see, you don't make decisions like that. You don't make decisions because it is easy. You make a decision because it will take you to the place where you want to be. Then Jesus tells us next, he gives us another warning here. He says, you don't make a decision based on the number of people who are making those decisions. You don't follow the crowd, Jesus tells us. I think one of the most difficult things for children, raising up children, and my kids when they were in primary school, one of the most difficult things is to teach them to be independent. To give them enough security to think for themselves and to be independent and to feel self-sufficient without having to follow the crowd. I think I'm not the only parent who faces this, but I think any parent who has children going to a primary school or kindergarten will come back and tell, the child will come back and tell you, this person don't want to become my friend, that person don't want to become my friend, you know. And sometimes they will have to bribe this friend, you know, with sweets, sometimes with money or with gifts and so on, just so that they can have a clique to be with when they are in school. They are not left out and they are not alone. You know, people want to be together. People like to think that just because a lot of people are doing it, therefore it cannot be wrong. I don't know whether any of you have heard about Elvis Presley. You know, that was my age. But there was a time when it was said that he had so many millions of fans. There was an advertisement that was out. It says, so many million fans cannot be wrong, they say. And sometimes it is like that. We make our decision because we have got this group of people that is going the same way and we just like to blend into the crowd and follow them. And Jesus says, you know, you can blend your crowd with other things and you may end up quite harmless, but he says, in this question of life, you got to think for yourself. You cannot follow the crowd. You cannot afford to do that. Because where the crowd is, he says, the end of it is destruction. It is not life. Jesus tells us this. He gives us advice how to make our decisions in this. And you are going to begin your life. You have many years ahead of you. And these are the three things that Jesus tells us be very careful about. Think about where you want to end up. Don't make your decisions based on whether that way is easy. Don't make your decisions because everybody else is going along that way. In this question of life, just to think for yourself. Just want to close with two things now, very quickly. Jesus begins and tells us this. He says, enter by the narrow gate. He tells us to enter. The word they enter, without having even to tell you the meaning of it, is a verb. Here in this particular case, it's a command. It's an action word. It is a word telling us to do something. It is a command telling us that we must take action with regard to this. And it's precisely the mistake many of us make. Some of you have been going to churches for a very long time. Some of you have been following friends to churches. You have heard the gospel many times. You have perhaps even liked what you hear in the church. You have perhaps even read your Bible a little bit, and maybe perhaps the Sermon on the Mount is such a great piece of literature. Wonderful. But you have not made a decision to do something about it. Jesus says, enter. Make that commitment. Do something about it. Don't just sit there and stand there at the gate there and put it like that. Hey, you know that over that gate, very nice grass, huh? Don't you think so? Oh, very nice flowers down there. Oh, lovely. Remember this, you are still standing at the gate. You have not entered into it. And that is the time when Jesus says that gate will be closed. And if you are still standing and admiring, you cannot get in anymore. The gate is closed. And the Bible tells us in another place that there will be people who will be looking and with gnashing teeth. Miserable. They have seen it. They have enjoyed it. They have seen the view. They thought it was nice. They thought they admired everything about it. But because they did not make the decision to enter and the gate was closed, there was gnashing of teeth. You know, the grinding of teeth that, oh, I missed it. Jesus tells us to enter. Make that decision. Many of us begin our life without thinking. In fact, at the beginning, when I was thinking, when I was crafting this sermon, I was thinking to myself, what will the title be? I thought to myself, maybe perhaps it's Jesus is telling us here how to make a decision. How to make a decision. But then as I think again here, Jesus is not only telling us how to make a decision, He is giving us a command. He is telling us to do something about it. He says, don't just stand there, don't just admire it, don't just say that it is good, don't give all the compliments, don't give your assessment of it, don't weigh it, but do something about it. And commit yourself to it, He says. One last thing regarding the word enter. Jesus tells us to enter the narrow gate. When you tell someone to do something, what is the assumption? What is the presumption behind it? That the person is not doing it, isn't it? If the person has already done it, you don't, it'd be stupid. So enter the narrow way, he should be saying, you have not gone in yet. He says, as long as you are standing there, He says, actually, you are entering the broad gate. He tells us there are only two gates, there are only two ways. If you have not entered the narrow gate and on the hard way, Jesus says, you are actually on the broad gate and you are going along that easy way, and He says, you are going to end up in destruction. And that is the word I want to leave it with you tonight. If you have not made that decision to commit yourself to what the Lord Jesus has said, if you have not committed your lives to Him, if you have not made up that decision and made up your mind, and you are just standing there at that gate and thinking about it,
It is not as if there are two gates and you can sit there in the middle there and think. No, he says. As long as you are not in that narrow gate, you are on the broad gate. As long as you are not on that narrow way and that hard way, he says, you are on the broad way and easy way to destruction. That is why Jesus says, now, today, as you hear the message, you must make that decision. You must make that decision. You must think. In fact, let me say this. If you go out of this room without making a decision to enter the narrow gate, if you leave this room without thinking and entering that narrow gate, you actually have already decided. And that is that you have decided to go on the broad way into destruction. There are only two, Jesus tells us. You are either on one or on the other. If you are not on one, then you are on the other. That is why today, that is why Jesus tells us here, enter by the narrow gate. I leave this with you. And I pray that you will make the right decision. Let us pray.